Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
What's up? Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, part two of this series with Dr. J. Moving on to ownership. Hey, if you're looking to get into implants, we got a couple implant courses this year, Digital Implant Continuum. We're doing a lot of digital full arch stuff using photogrammetry and the new grammetry, which is a more cost-effective version of photogrammetry. So if you're looking to get into single implants, first-time users, or full arch stuff, check us out at 3D-dentists.com. Okay, Jackson, so let's pick up where we left off. We're kind of going through some questions and we just talked about CE. I really put a big emphasis on communication and, you know, leadership would probably be the other one that I didn't talk on. I don't know if you read much, but reading some leadership books, that's definitely an area I really struggled through early on, was coaching the team, you know, being a leader. I mean, you've probably even seen in the 18 months you've been here, probably some growth in that area for me. You know, I think I do a pretty good job of that when I'm not overwhelmed with other things at this point. But that's an area. I think leadership and communication are the two most undersold, undervalued, and most beneficial areas in education.
No, that makes sense. You know, obviously,
when you coming from a military background, you can understand. I mean, leadership is probably a hugely
well. In the military, you know, the good and bad is you have to learn to be part of leadership, whether you're following or leading. The bad part is everyone has to be there. So whereas here, you know, people can and will, as we have seen, walk out at a moment's notice if you offend them or whatever.
Yeah.
which I think the thing I've seen the most change in you over the last 18 months is actually giving more grace, but knowing when to do it.
Yeah, that's some life experience, probably, I think. I've needed more grace. So I think when you learn it, when you learn the grace you need, you're more willing to give it, but that's good. Cause I would hope that would be one of them. So that's good to hear.
I'd say the next question is, and this kind of ties into the CE or whatever, is knowing when to start expanding in terms of in a lot of different ways, but one, your skill set, and that's what we've talked about a little bit. Two, expanding, meaning in this case, bringing on an associate, you know, or in a bigger space. So it's around 1,000 square feet. It's a very small practice, four ops. And so obviously, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but in the long term, if one of the things I've also learned about being here is being part of a group is so much fun and it makes your days just so much more enjoyable. It also allows the machine to run and you still go take CEs and everyone else to grow together and turn, and instead of having to shut down the whole office for a week while you're gone.
Yeah. Obviously my mentality is like, we try to press one doctor, one chair. And now I think you'll appreciate that more as an owner now than you probably did as an associate. So like when I look at like, okay, what can a four op practice do before you need more ops to expand? And I know some four op practices that will do $2.5 million, close to $3 million. Some of those are probably more in a fee for service environment. So okay, maybe you're looking at $1.5 to $2 million out of four ops. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason you can't have two doctors and two hygienists in four ops. I mean, it sounds crazy, but like that's a $2 million practice.
Yeah.
So I think what we did really well was we ran three doctors and four full-time hygienists out of eight ops.
Oh, in the old
office. In the old building, you know, for over a year, and really just dialed in some level of efficiency. So if you just shrink that down, okay, take a hygienist, a chair out. Now you've got four, three doctors and four ops.
Mm-hmm.
And just we're printing money, frankly, at that point.
Yeah.
So, and that allowed us to build the new building to really not feel any of the hit. So whenever I look at somebody like that, I'm like, well, one, are you willing to go through the pain to maximize your current space to a level that's unheard of so that when you do make the jump, it's an easy jump. And that to me is where a lot of people don't and aren't willing to. And so they suffer the consequences when they move and it hurts more because they wait to grow till they're in the space. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you look at us, not only did we hurt and grow, but what did we do?
We expanded.
Yeah, we hired you. So like by the time we were ready to move, we had already hired a fourth doctor.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy. So mm-hmm. most people would have waited to hire Megana until they moved and then think about how far behind.
Yeah, I would have been.
They would have been. So yeah, so I think to me, whenever you look at expansion and whatnot, it's trying to figure out what can you do out of your chair. I think there's no reason you can't run two doctors out of two chairs. Now you got to change the way you practice, right? I mean, you can't, if you're the dentist that practice crown, 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 you know, feeling like you're ping ponging around. I mean, I'm a pretty good example of someone who hits pretty high numbers, even before I was just doing hybrids, like now it's different, but like before I was doing that, I still would hit big numbers out of one chair.
Yeah.
Like I've never ping ponged like that.
Well, I mean, this last year for me, I've been an example.
Yeah.
I mean, I did $700,000
and basically one chair.
Yeah.
I mean, not basically 100% one chair outside of like maybe some limiteds or whatever.
We'll say 85%.
I mean, pretty much. I didn't know about it.
We always waited till Fridays when you were gone.
That's probably the case. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's no reason you can't do $1 million out of one chair. And then you got two hygienists. Let's say they're doing, you know, 150 grand each. That's 300 grand. So you're at 1.3.
Yeah.
And you have an associate doing 700,000. You're a $2 million practice out of four ops. But it also is like, again, like T-Bone says, are you willing to do what I did to get where I got? Are you willing to do what I did to get where I got? I mean, that's kind of right. I think that's the right saying.
I think that's what he says. I mean, there's a lot of that where it's like, I feel like I'm like, in a way, I'm a very lucky guy because having been with y'all for the last 18 months and watched y'all do mastermind and do all that, I think in some ways I'm probably in some ways better prepared to go do this than a lot of guys who have been out as short a time as I have been, like with being financially flexible and all that stuff. Yeah. Like, you know that I'm in a spot where I can
not take a paycheck for a couple months.
Right. And just pour back in and it doesn't really bother me too much. And that's nice. On the other hand, I think that the hardest part and the funniest part about having you where we sit, because you sit right behind me and in some ways we're very similar, but in some ways we're polar opposites because you are a jump in the fire and figured out guy and I'm a planner to the nth degree.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's actually kind of been, at first it was always to me anxious to watch you jump in there and I was always like, oh, this guy's going to die. And then you always worked it out. It was like, oh, okay. And then now
I look at it. That's my gift, I think. I create the problem.
you create it and then expand the fire. It's insane. And then you swallow it. It's amazing. Going out into a situation now where I've got to be the guy. Because now I wonder, you know, that's one of, you talk about the biggest fears. One of my biggest fears is that I'm going to, you know, paralysis analysis it to death. And you'll be calling me like, dude, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm still thinking. You're like, dude, just do it. And,
yeah.
And so that's kind of my biggest fear at this point.
Well, you got to know your tendencies. And it's good to support. It's good to have accountability. That's why masterminds work so well, you know, because it's ultimately accountability. It's why T-Bone's helped me so much because I can bounce people off and I can make educated decisions and then I run with them. And, you know, I portray myself a little bit of as a loose cannon just from like a brand standpoint a little bit. Just like my personality, I come across or err on the side of like winging it.
Do we need to get stories here?
Well, I know I do wing it some.
You do
wing it. But my point is though, is like it's way more calculated than you think. Mm. I guess is what I'm saying. And that even when it's whether it's clinical or business decisions, it's like most of them are very calculated in like what I know I can handle or how I'm gonna get out of it. Or it's not just like going rogue, I guess
right.
would be what I'm getting at. And so, but yeah, at some point you have to make decisions, not look back and go and do it.
Yeah.
And I see you doing that a little bit already with the technology, you know, not sure what to get or, you know, do I look at an alternative to Cerec or, you know.
Well, that was what we talked about, that with like the Benco or whoever to look at it.
Yeah. And so like I see that happening already, and that's normal, right? Because one of my favorite words or phrase or like things to talk about is just how much it's easy to be affected by the noise.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the noise is Facebook. It's your friends who give advice that really haven't done it. It's taking advice from a sales rep who sells you a product.
Yeah.
Who's got a vested interest in a certain way of doing things. You know, I think the best advice I can give people is find somebody who does it like you want to do it and just repeat it.
Yeah.
Don't. And I think that's like, that's one of the things that I feel like I've done pretty well is I've tried to just go listen to people. I'm actually not a great creator. I mean, like I'm not good at coming up with new ideas. I'm really good at just stealing other people's ideas, or not stealing them, taking their ideas and maybe tweaking them slightly to be better or just implementing their ideas. Yeah. And so the majority of the stuff that you see, or the majority of things we do is never like, oh, well, Sully just figured it out. It was, well, I saw someone who I wanted to be like doing it. And so I just copied them. And so that to me is, I think what will be the challenge for you is the dichotomy of just replicating, for instance, what we do versus trying to put your own personal stamp on it and deciding, okay, how much of that decision process is calculated in an improvement or ego driven?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very open about talking about my ego and the way that our ego plays a role in all this, because I mean, ultimately a lot of this building is built on ego, and I have no problem. I remember T-Bone saying, like, he asked me one time, he was like, is the decision to get this because you need it, or is it because your ego wants it? And he said, he goes, for what it's worth, I could care less whether it's ego or not. I just want you to acknowledge it and be okay with it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's important. So like, you're going to have that dichotomy of a decision that's like, do I just do the safe, repeatable thing? Or am I going to try to do it differently just for the sake of being different? And am I okay with that? And am I okay with the ramifications that that has positively or negatively?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think at this point, you know, like if it's not broke, I'm not going to fix it. It's just, I have zero interest in reinventing the wheel.
I get that, but it is, I'm just telling you, it's hard not to let, and it's okay. Like ego is not a bad thing in that regard, I guess, but it's something to keep in mind.
That's fair. You know, so one of the other things, like I'm always, and this is why I'm always picking your brain. what do you see when you, and you kind of knew the ins and outs of this practice, because obviously you've kind of been essentially a counselor on this for me, for sakes of the NDA. When you look at this practice, what do you say, here's what I'm going to do? Like, what is your game plan in the first 90 days?
Yeah. So my game plan would be to go in, do something really fun culturally with the team there. Be honest with them about, hey, I know y'all done things one way. I'm coming from a very different practice, a very different style. Over time, I want to transform this to be one of the, you know, top clinical digital practices in this area. And it's going to take time, and I would love to have your support. And I also want to lean on you all in regards to the patient base and whatnot. Now I'm going to have some non-negotiables, some things that are really, really important to me that are going to be different that I want us to implement. And I want to do that over a period of time. And then I would break that down somewhat according to the three groups of people. So like for hygiene, I'm going to introduce photography.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I'm going to ask, the one thing that's going to be new, nothing else.
How do you implement it?
I'm going to take photos on one patient a day.
For each hygienist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we're going to over time, you know, after 30 days, maybe we get to two patients a day, you know, and we're going to just, and we're going to critique photos, and we're going to, photos is all I'm going to worry about for the first year. Is we're going to just get to the point where we take photos and we use photos. It's so simple, and it's simple, it's dumb, but it's the best thing.
So what if you run into a situation where you have a hygienist who's paid on production? No, like, I mean, just a straight paid on production. So adding something like, and I say this in terms of, you know, you think of a schedule in 30 minute blocks or hour blocks or 2 hour blocks. I'm talking about a hygienist who can literally schedule a patient for 25 minutes because it's an old country practice. They know that Bob takes 24 minutes. I'll give him a minute to turn over the room. And then the next patient will be.
Well, what do you want to do?
Well, my goal is to go in and obviously not lose anybody on the team, but I want them to understand why I want to do these things and understand that, you know, in the long term, we're going to be giving better care. But at the same time, I don't know how to handle that. I would like to get everybody on an hourly wage, but like, for instance, I kind of asked that when I met the hygienist and she was not interested.
Well, I think that's sometimes.
You see with my conundrum with
that. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you don't necessarily need to, you don't necessarily give them options, I guess. I would consider moving a hygienist on production to salary, basically, just to kind of eliminate that. But yeah, I mean, as a side note, I firmly don't believe, it's a podcast episode probably for another day, but I firmly don't believe in hygienists being paid off production, period. And the reason being is that it takes the focus off of the true value that a hygienist brings, and that's their rapport and ability to discuss and review and, you know, get the patient interested in doing treatment on my side.
Well, and I have the benefit of having seen that in practice. And so I've seen it work.
Yeah. So I could care less what the hygienist produces. I mean, a hygienist that produces with her hands, you know, $100,000, but she treatment plans $500,000 versus the hygienist that produces $200,000 with her hands, but only treatment plans $200,000.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take the one that treatment plans more all day long. So you've got to rewire that thinking. And if the hygienists understand your why, then they'll start to come around. This is where ultimately turnover happens because you're trying to teach someone who's been doing it a long time to rewire their brain, and that's hard.
Yeah. Well, and that's the question I have is, you know, how do you go in and do that? And then, you know, obviously, you know that I'm a nice guy and I'm lots of grace and I'm just an easygoing guy. Knowing when to say, hey, look, well, I've been...
So, and this goes back to leadership, right? So my belief is the best leadership and the best coaching is immediate daily feedback. It's not meetings. The best time that when I was in my prime of coaching hygienists, it was checking hygiene every day and immediately giving them feedback as soon as we were done.
No.
Meaning we just finished a hygiene handoff. They let their patient leave. They come back, they clean their room. I'm in there talking with them as they clean the room.
You may want to clarify handoff because I didn't understand handoff until I came here. Like for anybody listening.
Well, I just mean like, okay, so when I walk in the room, my expectation is that the hygienist is going to like, you know, update me on just anything in their life or what's going on, what they've discussed the day, what they've done, treatment that they've seen or discussed or want me to look at, and maybe any treatment that the patient's interested in doing.
Yeah.
Like they're going to basically brief me on that in front of the patient. And if where they drop the ball or don't do that, I'm going to give coaching and feedback.
Other thing. So in the first, you know, 6 months, part of me, and this goes back to your ego talk. Part of me thinks I can go in there knowing what I know and having the experience I have and can kind of start to right the ship. The dentistry, I'm not as worried about in terms of general basic dentistry. That's just getting in there and doing it. But in terms of fixing the business, because the business of this practice is not doing great. Obviously, the current dentist he's just not been able to be there a whole lot. They're kind of running a skeleton crew and only opened a couple of days a week now. So part of me thinks I go in there and do everything I can to increase the systems and improve it to the point where I think, hey, I've got it pretty good. Then I go do something like mastermind or get a consultant or something like that. Would you agree with that? Or would you say, no, day one, you're better off
I think there's pros and, I mean, so here's my overall, obviously I'm biased on this, by the way. I've seen it work both ways. We've worked with practices that literally they bought the practice, they literally signed up for Mastermind, and then they closed on their practice like at the start date, basically. And we're ground one. I mean, Jesse from this year is a great example of that. Jesse in a startup did $1 million in her first year, and we worked with her the entire year. Like it was from down, from literally day one, we worked with her. We've had practices that were open, you know, had been open a year or two, and then joined us, then did it. So, you know, it works both ways. I think personally, the sooner you can be around it, the better. And the reason that is because one, you are going to benefit from how to deal with scenarios that are going to happen in the first 6 months as far as culture and leadership go that you're not used to dealing with. And so having some way of idea of handling that would be valuable. You also aren't going to build bad habits. You're not going to do things and have to undo them. The flip side of that is you may not. Yeah. I mean, because the challenge we have with people that are exist, like people that have been doing it for 20 years is, well, the changes they make, like in their schedule, for example, it takes 6-8 months to even see the change.
Yeah.
So I'm a big believer in the sooner. Now who, where, what, whatnot. I go back to what I said earlier, and that to me, I think the best thing people can do is hire someone who's done what they want to do or doing what they want to do. Now that's also like, I guess my selling point to like, if people want to like, listen to this and they're like, well, I want to practice like Sully has, or I want to do what he does or whatever. Then it's like, well, yeah, then the most likely, the most rational thing there would be just to hang out with Sully, right? If you wanted to run a boutique niche practice by yourself that was fee for service,
yeah,
I'm probably not your guy, right? I mean, that I don't have a proof. I may be able to help, but I don't have a track record.
Yeah,
in that. I mean, I kind of do because now I'm running a startup basically in our, like a new business in our business.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't have a track record that necessarily. So I just think that whoever you work with, it should be someone that's like, hey, they've got a track record of doing what I want to do. And I think that there's value in the sooner the better with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, and you know, my plan was,
and inevitably it's change. It should change. Meaning it probably should be somebody for a little while, and then you should gain other perspectives.
Yeah.
Like the best thing you can do is to now early on, I don't think that's the case. Let me be very clear. Early on, I think you should stick with somebody so that you don't, it's better to stick with one plan than to have four plans.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I like, you know, I know you're doing King Waters thing. Like as much as I don't love them, I will say that like what they do great is they get you on a plan, you stick with the plan.
Right.
Like if you don't muddy the water, the plan will be successful. So to me, that's the same thing with any coaching consultant or whatever, is that get somebody, buy in, listen to them and do what they say, and you'll probably be successful no matter who you hire.
Yeah. I won't say much about Kane Waters. I know your feelings on them.
They're great. They're great for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially people that want to spend a lot of money.
You know, I love to spend money.
I know you do.
The only other thing, and you already kind of talked about this, was just how much to spend, how much to budget for marketing, but where to spend it.
None. Zero.
You're full of it.
I'm serious. I wouldn't spend a dollar.
You market.
Yeah, it's different phases in life. I'm so trying to create a business. I'm running a startup. That's why we market.
But would this not be a pseudo startup?
No, you've got patience. You've got a lot of patience.
Yeah, it does have that benefit. But so you don't think there's any value or much value in marketing at this point?
No, I'd say virtually zero.
Why?
Because there's a shit ton of dentistry to do.
Okay.
What problem are you trying to solve with marketing?
Growth. Just growth of, you know, in all phases, but patient, like getting patients, more patients in the door.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you got to be there for a little bit. Like if there's patients coming in the door, I mean, you just said their hygiene's booked out for 6 months.
Well, that's the other thing we talk about is like, who's the first person I hire? Because do I hire a second assistant who can, like a flex, who can help with the front, who can help in the back? Or do you hire the hygienist with the caveat that, hey, you may be doing assisting too? and knowing that you're gonna have to pay them like a hygienist.
It's gonna what I'll tell you is in the current, I think what I would say is in the current market for everyone everywhere, it's gonna be a little bit of just finding the right person. Meaning I would probably have an ad out for every position or a general ad for a dental position. Because it's, especially in a rural town, it's going to be harder to find good people.
Yeah.
I mean, in Nashville, at least we have people that want to be here and moving here.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, so, you know, it, to me, it's sometimes it's more about the personality and the fit when you're growing than it is about the right, than the job title.
All right. And that's my last question. When do you know, how do you, at this point, when do you know to pull the trigger on firing an employee? Well, again, the benefit of being an associate is I never have to do this.
Yeah. Well, my first rule of hiring, I mean, of firing probably is I like to fire knowing they've already been replaced. So I don't really like to fire people. I like to replace them and make their job obsolete. So the best way to fire someone is to hire somebody, them take on that role, where all of a sudden that one person's really not doing anything, and then let them go. Or they choose to leave. That would be even better.
Yeah.
But I don't, unless it's a toxic personality or they're robbing from me or an asshole to patients, I tend to try to replace around them before just firing them.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, I mean, the toxic personalities to me, I'd rather fire them and figure it out than deal with that. The best advice there is short, sweet, to the point. Talk less.
When you're actually firing?
Yep. Jackson, you've done a lot for this practice and we're very appreciative. We've decided that we need to make a change. Today is going to be your last day here at Sullivan Dental Partners. We wish you nothing but the best. But this is a decision that we've made and it's a final decision. And so, again, we just thank you. But what we'll have you do is we'll have you get your things and then we're going to go ahead and actually, you know, as a courtesy, we'd like to pay you out 2 weeks. That's something we do. And we wish you the best. And then shut up.
Yeah.
And then there's probably some tears, maybe a screw you, whatever. And then, the worst thing you can do is get talked into letting him stay or over talking and saying something you shouldn't. Yep.
That's fair. That's all I got.
Well, dude, I wish you the best of luck. I'm excited for you. It's not going to be easy. It will be hard. There are benefits. It's not for everybody. I think you'll do well. You know, it'll be interesting. We'll have to talk maybe 6 months or a year and let the listeners follow up and see what your initial thoughts are, the good, bad, and the ugly of it. But
sounds good.
Work smarter, not harder. That's what you should do.
That's the plan.
You're actually going to have to work hard and work smart. That's the reality of it. All right, everybody. If check us out at 3D-dentist.com. Lots of implant training. Talked about the mastermind a little bit today. To me, it's, I think, the best program we do have. If you're someone who's in ownership or about to take ownership and is like, gosh, I just would love to have a supporting crew to navigate this of doctors around the country, then I think that we're one of the best places to do that for. So our mastermind program is a 6 month to a year long program that we just walk alongside and try to do not only dentistry, but life together and help you reach your goals above and beyond. So everybody work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.